You're going for 2 days.
Great. Good afternoon. One administrative thing at the start. So I got an email today from Dr. Betten where he says he still has to stay a few more days, and he asked me whether I could teach next week. Okay. In principle, I'm happy to do so. It's just on Monday at 2, I have a defense where I'm external member. I mean, this is nothing where you do really much. There is a warm body and you nod off in the end. But yes, there wasn't something unfair.
You want this person to graduate.
Yes, yeah, yeah. This person is hitting the 10. That's the awkward thing. This person is hitting the 10-year deadline. If you stay in the graduate program after 10 years, credits expire, and you need to apply that you can keep them. Anyhow, so that was something which Carter certainly couldn't move. So I wrote him, and he didn't write. I didn't yet get a reply. So my suggestion is, unless you hear something different, in particular from, I don't know if he emails you and then says some other thing, assume that there is no lecture on Monday, but that there will be one on Wednesday, where my guess is I'll be still there on Wednesday, and I'll finish this topic. Okay, just at the start, because otherwise I'm sure I forget it towards the end, and I don't want you to sit in an empty room otherwise on Monday. Right. So far, otherwise, any questions? No. Did I actually press the button? Yeah, I pressed it. Oh, and I even managed to upload the files from the previous days. They were hanging for, okay. So, we had defined the character of a representation. The character, if rho from G to GLV is a representation, then the character associated to rho is the map which maps a group element to the trace of the image of the group element under that representation. Here, formally it's a map, but you can associate the trace also to a map by saying take the trace in any matrix representation because it's always the same. Right, the trace is invariant under matrix similarity because it's the, depending on the degree, it's minus 1 to the degree times the second term of the characteristic polynomial. That's, for example, one way to see that it is invariant. And really the only two reasons at this point why we take the trace is, on the one hand, it's a number, and it's not a matrix, it's less. And it behaves nicely with respect to decomposing something. The block matrix is the trace of this matrix, it's the trace of this block plus the trace of this block. Okay. So let's look at a few properties of such characters. Proposition, and since this is chapter 2, it's now again proposition 1. Let's say chi is the character for representation rho. And let's say the degree of representation rho of degree n. So we are mapping the degree is the dimension of the vector space, and the dimension of the vector space. Then what do we have? The first property is that the character on the identity element of the group is just n. Why that? Because the identity element of the group must be mapped to the identity matrix. And the identity matrix is an n by n matrix with ones on the diagonal. And if you add it up, you get n. Okay. But that in some way actually is already a nice, not necessarily, but a nice property the character degree, and this is called the character degree also, that gives us a dimension in which the representation lives. Okay. The second property is that if I take the character, then I look at the character value on the inverse of an element, that's the character value on G complex conjugate. In the book where I copied this from, he writes a star instead of the bar, probably because of typesetting issues. Right. Why does this hold? Basically, it's because I have a finite group. So, let's look at this representation. Take a matrix for rho of G. Okay, the representation that some matrix, let's call the matrix A for lack of inventiveness. Now, I am over the complex numbers where any polynomial has roots. So, then one of the theorems in linear algebra, which you've probably in some version have seen, is you can do a base change and bring this matrix into upper triangular form. Have you seen that theorem? No?
Probably.
Okay. I mean, what you do is basically you take the characteristic polynomial and you know, okay, you have this polynomial, this must have a root, so there must be an eigenvalue. So you take the eigenvalue and you take the corresponding eigenvector. And you say, choose a basis where this eigenvector is your first vector. So at that point, you know your matrix must have the form zeros here and then something else here. And now you go, you notice that multiplying these matrices goes is multiplying this number with itself, multiplying this block with itself, and something more complicated happens here. But you don't care about what's happening here. You now recurse to this smaller matrix. It has a characteristic polynomial, so it has an eigenvalue. And that if you iterate this, you get upper triangular form. And for that you don't need any special property of the matrix. You just need that your characteristic polynomial splits into linear factors over the field. Okay. And what you can now, if it is symmetric, you can see that it's also symmetric and then actually becomes diagonal. You can do this to stay symmetric and then it would become diagonal. And in our case, actually, if you would restrict, if you would do the whole business of looking at representations, what we've done before, you can notice if you go to this cyclic group that you actually also could bring it into diagonal form. But we don't need this. We just need the upper triangle. Okay. Then A is similar. I will use this symbol. Similar matrix. Similar matrix meaning I can do a base change. Similar to a matrix B, which would be M inverse BM, where M is some M inverse AM, where M is a suitable base change matrix. And B is upper triangular. Well, since they are similar, the trace of A is the same as the trace of B. Right? And since the matrices are similar, I can do the same business with inverses. The trace of A inverse is the trace of B inverse. Okay. Now, what can I tell about the trace of B? Well, the trace of B is the sum of the entries on the diagonal. But what can I tell about these entries on the diagonal? I have a finite group. So the order of A, the multiplicative order of A, which is of course the same as the multiplicative order of B, has to be finite. Right? And what happens if I take an upper triangular matrix and I power it up? Well, I take the powers, because I have zeros below the diagonal, I take the powers of the diagonal entries, and something else happens in the rest. And I don't care what it, well, I mean, you can describe it, but it's a mess. I don't want to look at it. But on the diagonal entries themselves, I just take powers of the diagonal entries, right? That's what's happening if I power up an upper triangular matrix. Okay, and I have a finite group. This matrix must have finite order. That means a finite power of the of an entry on the diagonal must be 1. That means the diagonal entries of B must be roots of unity. Okay, so what do I have here? Upper triangular, the finite order implies the diagonal entries of B are roots of unity. So the trace of B is the sum over some zeta I, where the zeta I's are roots of unity. Not necessarily not I through, just some roots of unity. I don't care what they are. So zeta I is zeta I is, oh, now I is of course a really, let's make it zeta j e to the 2 pi I over nj. All right, some root of unity. And just I, if I use I as index, I can't use it as root of minus 1. Okay. So, what can I tell now about B inverse? Well, with the same, essentially the same argument as before. What happens if I invert an upper triangular matrix? What happens with the diagonal entries? The diagonal entries of the inverse of an upper triangular matrix have to be the inverses of the diagonal entries, because if I multiply upper triangular matrices, the diagonal entries are just multiplied by each other. There is something happening in the rest which is a mess, but if I'm just looking at the diagonal, it's as good as a matrix which is fully diagonalized. Right? So, what is the trace of B inverse? Well, the diagonal entries have to be the reciprocal roots of unity. So, I have 1 over zeta j. Okay, but now, what is the inverse of a root of unity? If I have a root of unity somewhere here, I want to invert it. What do I get for the inverse? Well, I have to take the reciprocal radius, that's radius is 1, there is nothing happening, and the negative angle. And what happens if I start here and I get this? This is the complex conjugate. So, 1 over zeta j is the same as zeta j complex conjugate. Okay. And that gives me this statement here. You still look skeptical?
Are the writings in red something you wrote or something that was left?
That is something I wrote. Zeta j is e to the 2 pi. And yeah, and I switched the color very carelessly here. Yeah. I just want to say it's some root of unity. Yeah. And since I don't know how much you've talked about roots of unity, I thought I'd rather give it the calculus name than to say, oh, it's a root of x to the k minus 1 in a suitable, for a suitable k in the algebraic closure over the rationals. Okay. So, when I invert, for the trace, I need to take the reciprocals of roots of unity, and that happens to be the same as their complex conjugate. Okay, and complex conjugation is a field automorphism, so instead of taking complex conjugate of all of these separately, I can take the complex conjugate of the whole thing. And therefore, it's the complex conjugate of the character. Good. Right. And, oh, that's very much. And the third property I want is that the character is constant on conjugacy classes. So, chi of T S T inverse is the same as chi of S for S and T in the group. Why that? Because the image of this, and if I look at the corresponding matrices, they are similar matrices, right? This matrix is the matrix for this conjugated with the matrix for this. So the character is constant on conjugacy classes. On conjugacy classes. Okay, right, okay, and what else, well, this is formally proposition, proposition two, but this is just one property which we can just add here. If the representation rho is a direct sum of sub-representations, let's call them row 1 and row 2, then the character for row is the character for row 1 plus the character for row 2. That's just saying the trace of a matrix which is consists of two blocks is the trace of this block plus the trace of this block. And that was really, in some way, the argument why we took the trace, why we didn't take the determinant. Okay, in the book he's talking about how to calculate the character for certain tensor products, but we don't really need this. Okay. I think at this point it might be useful to look at some examples for what these characters are. And in the book the examples come a little bit later after actually having proven that certain things hold. So at this point I will give you lists of all irreducible characters for certain groups. And I can't prove at this point that this is really all. There could be more. Basically, the justification that this is all will be a linear algebra argument, but we need a little bit more for this. So, let's start with G being the cyclic group of order 2. Almost the most boring. The trivial group is the most boring, but there isn't much happening. Well, okay. So what I'm writing is, what I will write down now is a character table, I should probably say. What is a character table? It's basically a matrix. The rows are corresponding to the irreducible characters. That's the characters of the irreducible representations. And the columns give me the values of these characters, and I don't need to write them down on the whole group, but it's sufficient if I write them down on conjugacy classes, because they are constant on conjugacy classes. So the columns are the conjugacy classes. So if I have a cyclic group of order 2, which is generated by an element A, I basically have the group is abelian, so conjugacy classes is the same as elements. I have two classes, namely I have the class of the identity and I have the class of A. Okay. And now I want to write down irreducible characters. Can we find an irreducible representation? There's one we can always find, the boring one, the trivial one, mapping everything to the 1x1 matrix with 1. Okay. We can do this, and the trace of this matrix is also 1. So I can map to 1 and I get 1 and 1. Okay. Can we find another representation? Well, I could again map to 1x1 matrices and map A to minus 1. Right? And what I claim is that is all. And the argument which we will later get that this is all is the argument that the character table is square and that the irreducible characters actually form a basis for the whole space of functions. That is not obvious. This is a highly surprising result. We've taken the trace for basically reasons of laziness and not having a better idea. And we end up actually in the end not just with a basis, but with an orthonormal basis. Not for the standard scalar product necessarily. But here, so that's why if you take the standard norm, they don't have, the rows don't have norm 1. We need to do a slight modification there. But we basically there get a result which is as good as it can get. An orthonormal basis for a vector space. That's essentially, in linear algebra, the best you can hope for a basis.
You're saying you always get this?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And that is at this point not clear that why it is happening. But essentially, the linear independence argument shows you, okay, you can't have more. If you have two classes, you can't have more than two irreducible characters. You have actually exactly as many irreducible representations as you have conjugacy classes. But at this point, this is just an observation. We haven't seen that it holds. But basically, later, once we've seen this, that's the argument why I've given you all. And why I don't need to look for more irreducible representations. Right? To find these were not very hard to find. But why aren't there more? Well, that's a rather strong argument which tells us we found all. Okay. Let's take the symmetric group S3. In the symmetric group, elements are conjugate if and only if they have the same cycle structure. And that is basically, you can immediately write down, you write the permutations with corresponding cycle structures, one under the other, and you take the permutation which maps the points on the top to the points below, and that permutation will do the conjugation. So we have three conjugacy classes. We have the class of the identity, we have the class of two cycles, and we have a class of three cycles. Okay. So, one representation. We always get the trivial one. Okay. The next representation, and I mean, yes, one can start thinking what is happening or what could I do. I'm taking the sign of the permutation. The sign behaves nicely with multiplication. If the permutation is odd, I want a minus 1. If the permutation is even, I want a 1. So I would get 1 minus 1, 1 here. Okay. And then there is another representation. Remember, we had this group is isomorphic to the to the dihedral group for a triangle. And there I have the natural representation by rotating in space. Okay, so that is a two-dimensional representation. What is happening?
I'm sorry, why did you put it to there?
Okay, no. So the irreducible representation is the one where I'm looking at this group as the symmetries of a triangle in two-dimensional space. So every element is mapped to a 2x2 matrix.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And this is the character degree. That's just the dimension of the matrix. That's why I'm putting a 2 there. Okay. Now, and that's the bit where I need to look more. What is happening? I want an element of order 2. Well, that would be, for example, a flip of the triangle, if this is a very bad triangle. That flip. Okay. I need to have a trace for this. For this linear operation. If I choose my standard coordinate system, the one basis vector is mapped to its negative, the other one stays the same. So the matrix here is the matrix minus 1, 1, right? And that has trace 1 plus minus 1, 0. Okay. Similarly, element of order 3 would be a rotation of the triangle. And now I need to write down a rotation matrix. But if you do this, So I want the rotation matrix and I want the trace of that rotation matrix. So it's basically twice I have cosine, sine and minus sine, so I have twice the cosine. And now what I want to argue is that I have value minus 1. Minus.
Is that correct? Yeah, cosine of pi over 3 is, or cosine of pi over 3 is about 1 half.
Yes, and yeah, I don't think there is a slicker way of writing this without doing more effort. So these three, that this representation, this two-dimensional one is irreducible, one can find relatively easily. If it was reducible, there would have to be a one-dimensional subspace which is invariant. One-dimensional invariant subspaces are eigenvectors. And if you just look at the possible eigenspaces for these matrices, you find there isn't anything. Okay, so these are three representations which are clearly representations and clearly irreducible. Well, the argument that there isn't more is because I have three conjugate sequences. Okay. Worth to do another. Yeah, let's do one other example. Let's look at the symmetries of a square, the dihedral group of order 8. So there I have square 1, 2, 3, 4. So for conjugacy classes, but I can always take the class of the identity. And now there are a few things where one probably needs to do a minimum of operations, of a little bit arithmetic to see that everything works out. I have in this group a center. And that center consists of the 180 degree rotation. Element that has order 2 and elements in the center are their own conjugacy class. So this is 1, 3, 2, 4, and that's the center. Okay. And then I have two kinds of reflections. I have reflections along a diagonal, so that would be, for example, the reflection 1, 3, and it turns out that is conjugate to the reflection with along the reflection along this axis is conjugate to the reflection along this axis by conjugating with the rotation. I have similarly a reflection along an axis which goes through two opposite sides, so I would have 1, 2, 3, 4, and that is conjugate to 1, 4, 2, 3. And I have a 4 cycle, 1, 2, 3, 4, which happens to be conjugate to this place. Okay, and then you count and you see you've got all elements, so that is we have 5 conjugacy classes. Okay. In this group, well, I can always take the trivial representation. Now, what I can also do with representations, if I have a representation of a factor group, that representation will be a representation for the group. First, take the natural homomorphism in the factor group, and then take the representation that's a representation of the original group. Right? Okay, so D8 has a structure. How does the subgroup lattice look? This is the center, and we have two conjugate subgroups here. And this is the center, and this factor group is a Klein 4 group, a C2 cross C2. This one. So we note that D8 modulo its center is isomorphic to C2 across C2. Well, for C2 we have seen and so we have 3 different factor groups C2 here, right? In C2 cross C2. One C2, another factor group C2, another factor group C2. So we can take the irreducible representations of C2, which we had, one mapping the non-trivial element to minus one, and mapping the trivial element to one. We can take that representation and use it also for this group. So, what are these subgroups? This one is the subgroup generated by 1, 2, 3, 4. This is cyclic of order 4. So, if I take the irreducible representation, the non-trivial one for this group C2, right? So, I would map the trivial element of C2 of this factor group to 1. The trivial element of this factor group is anything which lies in this cyclic subgroup. So that's the identity, that's the 4 cycle 1, 2, 3, 4, and it's square 1, 3, 2, 4. And anything which lies outside to minus 1. So I have minus 1 here and minus 1 there. Okay. Was this... This might have been a little bit quick, what I did. We'll do the same thing twice more. And I hope at that point it becomes becomes a little bit more comfortable. So what I'm doing is I want to taking a representation for a factor group and make it a representation of the group by prefixing the natural homomorphism. Right? If I have a map from here, I can always make a map from there to the same image by first mapping from here to there. And if all is homomorphisms, the result will be a homomorphism. Okay. So, and I'm taking factor groups. And I'm taking factor groups cyclic of order 2 because that's basically the smallest where something interesting can happen. So, there is another factor group of order 2. Yeah, and these are normal because they have index 2, and a subgroup of index 2 is always normal. So, what is this subgroup here? Well, you can't really say because the diagram is symmetric. Let's say this would be the subgroup generated by 1,3 and by 2,4. So it's a subgroup generated by the two diagonal flips. Okay. So, in that subgroup, again, I have a factor group C2. So this came from the red one. Now I'm going to the green one. Okay. I want to see what is the image of an element under that representation. Well, I need to know, is this element in the normal subgroup or not? Because if it is in the normal subgroup, it will be the trivial element of the factor group and will be mapped to 1. Or if it is not in the normal subgroup, it is not the trivial, it's the non-trivial element of the image in the factor group is the non-trivial element of the factor group, and the non-trivial element of the factor group is mapped to minus 1. Okay? So that's the thing I'm doing here. Which elements are in the normal subgroup? Which elements have the trivial image in the factor group? That's this element here, the identity, and it is 1,3 because this is clearly in the normal subgroup, and 2,4 is conjugate with it, and this class is also in the normal subgroup, right? This subgroup is contained in there. It's the product of these two elements. So these three classes lie in there. These elements in these classes are mapped to the non-trivial element and under the representation would be mapped to minus. Okay. Right. What is this subgroup here? This subgroup is generated by 1, 2, 3, 4 and 1, 4, 2, 3. So it's generated by the horizontal and vertical flips, and the product would be the 180-degree rotation. So which classes lie in there? Well, for lack of color, let's use squiggly line as color. I have the trivial representation 1. What else lies in there? This lies in there. In the normal subgroup. This does not lie in there. This lies in there. And this does not lie in there. Okay. So that's how I filled out that diagram, how I got these numbers. Okay, and with the same argument as before, I have another representation. Namely, I have a natural two-dimensional representations, geometric rotations of the square. Right? And with basically the same argument as before, namely do it yourself, we see it is irreducible because there are no common eigenvectors. This is irreducible. So we have a two-dimensional representation. Okay. Now I need to write down and to find out what the character values are. I basically need to look at matrices and need to look at the trace. So, 180-degree rotation. 180-degree rotation maps this vector to its negative and this vector to its negative. So it's the matrix of minus 1, minus 1 on the diagonal. So that trace is minus 2. Okay, 1, 3 is the diagonal flip along this diagonal here, right? Okay, I can choose in what basis I want to work, right? Because the trace is invariant under the basis. So let's, for the moment, choose not this basis, but let's choose this basis here, right? What will happen under this basis? One of the basis vectors will be mapped to its negative, and the other basis vector will be mapped to itself. So I have in that basis 1 minus 1, right? So I get 1 plus minus 1 is 0. Here I can do the same argument. Here I'm staying in the normal basis. If I do the horizontal flip, that vector... No, sorry, if I do the flip along the... Yes, if I do the flip along the horizontal axis, this vector will be mapped negative. The other one stays the same, 1 minus 1. And if I do the vertical flip, that vector becomes negative, right? So again, 1 and minus 1 on the diagonal, 1 plus minus 1 is 0. Okay. The only one where I need to work slightly is the 90. Do I need to work slightly there? The 90-degree rotation. Well, what happens under 90-degree rotation? This vector becomes this one, and that vector becomes a negative of the first one. So my matrix has only two entries off the diagonal. Sorry, that's for you. Off the diagonal. Right? The first basis vector is mapped to the second, so the first column is 0, 1. The second basis vector is mapped to minus the first, so the second column is minus 1, 0. So I have zeros on the diagonal, so the trace is also 0. Okay. Yeah?
Is this still
orthogonal? I didn't tell you what inner product.
Yeah, okay,
all right. So, and that is something I didn't get good. You have seen in linear algebra the standard inner product. X1 times Y1 plus X2 times Y2 plus X3 times Y3. But there one can define other inner products. And what we need to do is basically to put different weights on the different components. Essentially, what we need is we need to weight each class with how many elements it has. Which gives this class has one element, this class has one element, these classes have two elements. And if you do this and we need to scale it by dividing by the group order, then things come out nicely. But that's why you probably, if you just calculated it, here it might still come, no, even here it doesn't come out immediately, okay. But that's if you do it naively, you will not. If you take the standard scalar product, they're not orthogonal.
Certainly not.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just the.
Yeah.
Had the last one been one, then you would have only needed to normalize the standard.
Yeah. No. It's a little bit more with weights.
Okay.
Okay, and I claim that is all. And again, later the linear independence argument will basically give us this because this is a square matrix of full rank. I can't add further rows without making it linear dependent. Okay. In these examples which I've given you, the entries are always integers. That's actually sheer dumb luck.
Well, I think so.
And that is something that's almost never happened. It happens in rare cases. And one class where it always happens is the symmetric groups. For the symmetric groups, the character tables happen to have integer entries. And basically the reason for this is that elements are conjugate to all their powers of the same order. This has to do with the reason for it is essentially that if you have a representation and you apply a Galois field automorphism, you get another representation. And you then need to see what happens with field automorphisms on roots of unitarity. Well, that's probably going somewhere where we really don't need to look at the moment. But that is happenstance because of small examples, or here because it's a symmetric group. So if you pick almost any other group, you will get proper roots of unity in there. And I just didn't do it in the examples, because then clearly writing down the matrices gets more messy, and I didn't want to do that. Yeah. Okay. So these are some irreducible characters and some character tables. Basically, what you will be doing once Dr. Betten is back is to look at the mechanism which will allow you to obtain the character tables for symmetric groups. So the entries in these matrices, essentially using some operations on tableaus, or some operation, some counting on tableaus, or it's in the end base change on certain spaces and functions, but you can get the coefficients you need by essentially counting tableaus with certain properties. Okay. Right. So that's three examples. What I now want to do, probably I don't want to, let me probably, even though this comes a little bit later, just since it's not worth to start a half a page theorem in 2 minutes. So, let me just give you this definition. If phi and psi are functions from G to the complex numbers, define an inner product of phi with psi to be 1 over the order of G, sum over all elements G in G, phi of G times psi of G complex conjugate. And that's the inner product which I would need to take. So if multiple elements are in the same conjugacy class, I need to take these products of the values multiple times. And you don't see this directly in the character table, right? So this class has order 1, order 1, order 2, order 2, order 2. So, and I didn't yet show you that this is an inner product. Well, it's probably not that horribly hard to see that it is one, because it's a part, if you write the functions not on conjugacy classes, but at lists of values on the whole group, it's the standard inner product just weighted with 1 over the group order. Okay? And then it's a Hermitian, since we are over the complex numbers, it's a Hermitian inner product. And then let's note, or rather claim, that's something we haven't yet seen, the irreducible characters form an orthonormal basis of, well, functions on the conjugacy classes of functions constant on conjugacy classes. There are more functions. I could have a function which on 1,3 has a different value than on 2,4. That would be also a function on the group. So I'm just looking at the set of functions which are constant on conjugacy classes. Such functions are called class functions. And in on that space, for that space, the irreducible characters form an orthonormal basis. And once one has seen this fact, then we know the character table must be square. So we know these are all irreducible representations. And we also know if we have an arbitrary representation and we want to know what are the irreducible constituents, right? What do I need to do? I just need to take the inner, to decompose the corresponding character in the irreducible characters, and I can do so by forming the inner products, and that will give me the coefficients. Okay. I think I've basically reached more than the end of today's lecture. Thank you very much. Have a nice weekend. So unless you unexpectedly get an email, which I don't think is happening, there will not be a lecture on Monday, but there will be one on Wednesday. Thank you very much.